Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of the Iron Maiden podcast. Episode number 4 is called El Dorado, and this one's based on the new track that Iron Maiden just released a day before they started the Final Frontier World Tour. Now, the last episode was based on Blaze Bailey, and I got amazing reviews for that. And thank you, all the fans and listeners who've been listening to the podcast for so long. You know, it's been so great, the support, the reviews, and everyone's just been so, you know, good and positive about it. So I want to thank all the fans initially. That's the first thing I want to do. Secondly, we had Sean Muse from Under the Hills. We have an interview with him. And I think he is, I think, by far the most enthusiastic guy I've ever met in my life. Now, Sean is from Run to the Hills, which is a tribute band for Iron Maiden. And I think they're the one of the best tribute bands I've heard, because they actually come closest to Iron Maiden. I mean, Sean is just phenomenal. His singing style it's really similar to Bruce Dickinson. I think he's the closest to Bruce Dickinson, and definitely a huge Maiden fan, so all the more a much better person to have on the podcast. And we'll discuss El Dorado, the new song. I'll just give you a little basic on it. I think the song was released on the 8th of June. It's from Final Frontier. It's a very strong song, honestly, but I don't think it's as strong as the songs on A Matter of Life and Death. It's a very good song. It's completely different. A Matter of Life and Death is one of my favorite albums, so definitely set the bar really high. It's not that El Dorado is a bad song, but I just feel that it could have been a little better. But it's still a really great song. The riffs are really catchy, and I think the entire way the song has been composed is really good. Also, Maiden did release the Final Frontier, the video, which is, I think, one of their best videos. I don't think Maiden makes really good videos, except for a few, but I think this was their best video so far. The song, very basic, just, like Bruce going on and on singing the Final Frontier and the chorus. Very basic, but still very catchy again. I mean, I heard that song and I kept singing it for like 4 or 5 days. But on the whole, I think that's also a pretty strong song. And the 30-second samples for all the songs from the Final Frontier were released on the Walk-In site. And I don't know how many Maiden fans resisted the urge, but I couldn't. So I definitely went to the site and I heard some of the songs. And let me tell you, this new album song, it sounds extremely strong. Very, very strong album. So really excited for it. Worldwide, I think the album's releasing on the 16th of August. The United States fans will have to wait for a day more. 17th of August and the album will be yours. But I think the enthusiasm is the same. And we'll move on to the interview with Sean. So, thanks guys, thanks for listening. Alright, hi Sean. Welcome to the Iron Maiden podcast. It's really great to have you on the show. For all the new listeners out there, Sean Muse from Run to the Hills, a tribute band to Iron Maiden, and honestly, I think it's one of the best tribute bands I've heard so far. And Sean was nice enough to come on the show. So, welcome, Sean.
Hello, this is Bruce Dickinson.
Wow, that sounds like Bruce. That sounds a lot like Bruce. Maybe I'll get you to do Bruce once and, you know, fool the listeners out there or something.
Now, hello, this is Sean. How are you?
I'm good. So we'll get started in with the interview then. Tell us a little about Run to the Hills, you know, how it came about, and, you know, how basically you were inspired to, you know, form a tribute band.
Absolutely. Well, first off, pretty much like anybody else that does a tribute band, big fan of Iron Maiden. Going back to the 80s, of course, when I was a teenager. Actually, in 97, we formed a tribute called Killers. And very quickly in doing that, what happened was we said, geez, wouldn't it be kind of neat to get with Iron Maiden and meet them and maybe get their endorsement, and, you know, thought it might be good for us. And also, of course, to meet our heroes and, you know, even be anywhere remotely near them would be a great idea. So, funny thing happened. Fairly quickly after that, we ran into Bruce Dickinson, actually. He was on his solo tour, the Axon and Burke tour. As it turns out, not only got to meet him, but spend a little over a week on his tour with him and Adrian Smith and the band, and, you know, get to know them, and really just a very exciting kickoff. And then not too long after that, Iron Maiden came around to the States, because we're in the United States. And same thing, met them, got to know the mix set. You know, they kind of got a chance to hear who we are, and they were pretty, you know, very impressed. And as strange happenstance has it, they were on their Virtual 11 tour, Blaze Bailey singing. Then something very special happened. For them it wasn't. They had to postpone a number of dates because Blaze Bailey was having vocal issues. And somebody contacted us, and we did something that no other band has ever done. And what happened was, on August 1st of 98, we actually filled in for the Real Iron Maiden in Hartford, Connecticut at the Webster Theater.
Jesus Christ, that is so cool.
Yeah, that was pretty, you know, see, here we go from putting this tribute together because we love them, to all of a sudden, you know, doing a gig they were supposed to do in Hartford. So things really took off from there. But then what happened was, early around 2002, the band just kind of fizzled. Just, you know, typical case of people having personal lives going their separate ways. What I decided to do was, after a short break, I decided to continue on. But I wanted to change the name to Run to the Hills because, as you probably know, perhaps the most famous song from Iron Maiden that even people that aren't quite the fans that we are going to be familiar with is Run to the Hills. So I thought that would be just good in terms of awareness and exposure. So we did that, and that really took things to a whole new level. Had a terrific lineup. Played mostly just, you know, the Northeast and the United States, because, again, we're all family men and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And all during this time, from 97 all the way through now, we've on every Iron Maiden tour, we've been fortunate enough to, you know, be granted access to, you know, meet and greet with them and talk to them and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I have so many stories of, you know, like Ed Hunt the tour. I don a wig for the tribute because Bruce Dickinson had that long straight hair in the 80s.
Yeah, true.
So I said, geez, I'll get that. And, I mean, for example, in Boston 1999, Bruce put my wig on during the Iron Maiden show at the Boston Orpheum. And it was pretty funny, actually. But he looked just like himself in 85. It was pretty funny. And then later that night, their security director, his name was Wally, he jumped in my car, and the whole band called me to go to the hotel. So, I mean, there's just lots of different memories like that. So the tribute to me kind of embodies everything about being a fan and, you know, being lucky enough to meet these guys and talk to them and drink with them. And, of course, doing the performances, I take it very seriously. You know, Iron Maiden, to me, is an awesome band, but just talking from a vocalist perspective, for me, Bruce Dickinson is the toughest singer to mimic. And the reason being is he's a one-of-a-kind. He has a very big range on chest voice, and he has a head voice, too. So anyone that's a little more technically knowledgeable, he's not like some of the other singers where they go more into a falsetto tone. He's a bona fide, almost like a tenor with the strength he had. And for me, vocally, he peaked between 1980 and 82. And what I've always attempted to, on a good night, I think there's been some success, is to sound like Bruce on, actually when he was in Samson in 81, or Iron Maiden on the Number of the Beast tour. And basically based the whole act around acting like the band. We actually try to get in character and act like the band. And we find that it makes it even more fun for us rather than just jamming some Iron Maiden songs. And also, of course, for anyone that happens to be in attendance, they find that, again, the music has to be there, but to see some kind of a visual act, I think, really helps sell the idea that they're in an Iron Maiden experience. We will never be remotely, nobody will be remotely close to being anything nearly
like
as good as Iron Maiden.
True.
But on a really good night, we've been told by many people that, you know, we're spot on, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really what fuels us. It's certainly not an income opportunity, I can tell you that from experience. And we could care less. We just love Iron Maiden, the music, the experience. And for us, our selfish reason for doing it is because we want to make that impression on whoever's coming to see us. And when we get that terrific feedback that they're, like, you know, saying they're blown away, this and that, and we have been compared to a lot of others, and, I mean, with all due respect, we've been told that we're in a different league. I guess is a little bit of a pride and ego. Pride and ego, my lad.
Yeah, but then I think that's the thing with Maiden fans, right? Everyone's so, it's just like you're so passionate about the band. You can't be a Maiden fan and be like, oh yeah, I listen to them and they're cool or whatever. But it's like if you're a Maiden fan, you're just crazy. You just...
Well, good point. For example, I think it's 2004, we were on national television. And they said, what song do you want to do by Iron Maiden?
Uh-huh.
And actually, in some debate within the band, but what we chose to do was actually one of their new songs. We did something off their Dance of Death album, the song New Frontier. And that was in front of millions of people. And the reason we did that is, A, we like the new stuff. I mean, I feel that the band is very vital. And putting out, for me personally, I loved their material in the 80s. The 90s, I'm just getting around to embracing some of it. But really, since Bruce and Adrian came back, and I've liked everything they've put out, I think we're going to talk about the newest one, which I love to death. We did New Frontier because, and we had an interview, and we said a point blank. We said Iron Maiden is a current band putting out current material, and they're not just as Bruce always says, they're not a cabaret band just going out.
Exactly. In an interview, he clearly said, we're not a band dragging the skeletons of our old songs along. So it's important to play some of the new stuff because you need to acquaint Maiden fans, some of the newer Maiden fans with the new stuff, because you can't just keep playing the old stuff all the time. I think, they received a little criticism for playing, the set list for this tour, especially the Final Frontier World Tour, is primarily based on the albums that, involved Bruce and Adrian back in the band, like after 2000, the three albums, Brave New World, Dance of Death, and A Matter of Life and Death, and a few fans didn't really, like that. But I think it's a really cool concept because I've really always wanted to hear songs from those albums, so it's a good idea.
Absolutely. I personally, I love that they're doing the last 10 years, a nice hodgepodge of that. And of course, they got sprinkled in a few of the older ones, but they've done arguably three nostalgia type tours in the last 10 years. They did the Give Me Ed tour, uh-huh, which I'm a little partial to because I was fortunate enough to get on stage with them in Montreal, Canada. That whole happened for me. And there's actually a video of that, so when I have to pinch myself, I watch that. That's quite an experience. But that was one of them where. And I was lucky enough to spend a lot of time with Ronnie James Dio, who, we all miss, of course.
God bless his soul.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to... I can't stop playing Tarot Woman. And actually, I've been playing Love Is All, which is what he did from the Butterfly Ball and the Grasshopper Feast in 74. But different subject. But they did that tour. Then they did the Early Days tour. And then most recently, they did the Somewhere Back in Time tour. So they uh-huh. really, in my opinion, they've done a lot of comedy.
The classic stuff.
To people that are, partial to their, we'll call it the classic tunes. But I love, for example, I spent, I think, about a week and a half out on the Matter of Life and Death tour back in 2006.
Uh-huh.
And the band did the whole album through, and I loved it. I love the album anyways, but I love that they are willing to come out and stand by their new material.
Exactly. The whole concept of that was really cool, to play the entire album. And that didn't go down with many Maiden fans because they didn't like some of the progressive stuff that A Matter of Life and Death had to put. But I honestly think that that's one of their strongest albums. Since Power Slave, for me, that would be Maiden's strongest album.
Myself included. For me personally, since I loved everything up through Somewhere in Time, and my favorite since Somewhere in Time, I would have to say, is Brave New World and A Matter of Life and Death. Those are the ones that stand out for me.
Definitely.
So I was a pig in mud because, again, I love the album, but I also, even within my band, we had some bandmates that were upset about the set list, and people I know that are Maiden fans.
Uh-huh.
And I just told them to saw it off. I mean, it's like, you can come see us if you want to hear 2 Minutes to Midnight for the 312th time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's the void we fill. But even, we're trying to branch out. We've had some personnel issues, meaning where we had to change a couple band members, so they're learning material. But we have full intentions to keep sprinkling in music pretty much from the entire career of the band, mm-hmm. and actually including one of the new tunes that was released, El Dorado, that made an immediate impression on us.
About El Dorado, I think it's a really cool song, but honestly for me, I don't think El Dorado is stronger than any song on A Matter of Life and Death. It's a very good song, very strong. I think, you know, Bruce has again come up with some awesome vocals on it, but I don't think it comparatively, at least since A Matter of Life and Death set the bar really high, I still think that it's probably not as strong as the songs on A Matter of Life and Death, but I still think it's a really, really good song.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the one thing I noticed is it's a it appears to be a little turn in direction from what I've been hearing for the last 10 plus years, which is
exactly.
It didn't have a bass intro, outro. The band just kind of got back to getting right down to business with the riff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for some of us, just to hear the big crescendo beginning, that in itself was kind of welcome in some circles because, again, a lot of the classic material was riff-driven, and to hear that was pretty cool. And again, there's a lot of teeth in the guitars, and actually for me, Bruce Dickinson, of course, is my hero. The part of the song that's taken a little longer to grow on me has actually been just some of the vocal choices on the verses and whatnot. In my opinion, Bruce is not just the best technical singer and frontman ever. I think his choice in melody lines is just one of those things that, you know, a legend has, like a Dio and a Bruce.
Exactly.
They can take a song and they actually elevate the song through their vocals, meaning it really goes to a new level of being melodic and whatnot. So I love this song myself, and actually I've only heard a little bit of Final Frontier, because again the album's not out yet. I think you were telling me earlier that they just released some clips that I'm gonna have to get around to listening to. But
mm-hmm.
Iron Maiden's probably, there's only two or three bands that I would actually go grab the real CD at midnight when it comes out.
Exactly.
And, at the top of the list would be Iron Maiden, of course.
Definitely,
or,
yeah.
Or Bruce solo CD, of course.
Oh yeah, I think Bruce has done some amazing solo work. I mean, after he left Maiden, I love those albums. Actually, they're really cool. Anyway, that's a little off topic from Maiden, but I still think El Dorado is a good song. It's definitely not as strong as, like I said before, any of the songs on A Matter of Life and Death, but it is a very strong song. And also the Final Frontier. I think one thing that about that song that I really like was that it's catchy. I mean, even though he's all, the chorus is just the final frontier on and on again, I think it's still really catchy, because after I heard that, that song kept playing in my head for like the next 10 days and I kept singing it. So, it's definitely a really good song, but unfortunately I think, the only sound you can get is from the video, and I think the sound effects are sort of overwhelming, and they sort of it's accentuating, anything that you normally hear out of it. The riffs, you can't hear them clearly, and so I mean, there's still a lot to hear, and I think the video is about 5 minutes long, whereas the song's like eight.
I think sonically too. I think Bruce was alluding to that the actual tracks on the CD will be far superior to the MB3 they leaked out.
Uh-huh.
And when you listen to music, independent of how strong the material is, of course a really good production lends itself to enjoying that song in a studio environment.
Precisely.
My only criticism of the last CD, A Matter of Life and Death, is I wish they did master it. And the reason being, it just doesn't seem to have the same fire and punch musically when I try to crank it up as, for example, Dance of Death or Brave New World. I understand the issues. They didn't want it to sound too polished and whatnot, but I just wish that they had mastered it maybe just a little louder. That's probably because I'm so hard of hearing from going to see all their shows.
Uh-huh. I absolutely get what you're saying. But to be honest, this is really funny, because I actually think Dance of Death needs to be remastered. I actually think the guitars are a bit too raw. I mean, a little too raw. Not too much, but I think Dance of Death would do really well if it was remastered a little.
Well, that Brave New World probably is the sound that I really loved.
Yeah. As far as that was a perfect sound.
Kevin Shirley, I was already a fan of him because he, another one of my favorite bands on this planet is Rush. And he actually, he engineered their Counterparts CD in 93. And that's an amazingly good sounding record for them.
Exactly. Could,
so to hear his big analog sound is terrific. But, you know, going back to the new song, El Dorado, I think it is very strong. And it, in some respects, as strong as stronger than the last album. It's definitely different, though. It's more of it in the vein of kind of that early Maiden, you know, riff-driven.
It's a very up-tempo beat, I think, because, you know, some of the stuff that we saw in the last two albums, especially Dance of Death and A Matter of Life and Death, were a little dark, you know, because A Matter of Life and Death was themed around war and religion and stuff like that, and so was Dance of Death. But I think this is a little up-tempo, and it's a good song, to be honest. I have no issues with the song. I think it's a brilliant song, but, you know, again, it's like I said, you know, A Matter of Life and Death would be my, you know, favorite album after Powerslave. So I think, you know, it sort of sets the bar high. But, yeah, like I said, it's still an amazing song.
Yes, and I love that album. I mean, to hit the legacy for me is just an unbelievable tune. And man, going on and on about, I like the Longest Day.
I mean,
1,000 stars. I'm getting too excited now. It's very early here, by the way. I haven't even had any coffee yet, but we're actually performing tonight and tomorrow night, so I'm going to have to, of course, warm myself up. Maybe I'll go hit the tennis ball, or maybe I'll do some cartwheels over at the beach, because again, we're playing near the ocean tonight, so we're calling it tongue in cheek the Number of the Beach Tour. So you have to check that out.
It would be cool, actually, if I ever got to see you guys play, because I mean, I heard some of the stuff that you had put up on the Facebook page, and I think it was really, really awesome. For all the Main listeners out there, Sean sounds exactly like Bruce, and trust me on this, he comes very, very close to being Bruce. So it's really phenomenal. I'll actually play, you know, a small part of Children of the Damned that's covered by Run to the Hills at the end of the show, so you guys can actually listen to how awesome it really sounds. Anyway, Sean.
That's actually it. It's all lip synced.
You know. Lip synced. Don't say that. Don't say that.
It's called Milli Vanilli Iron Maiden.
Okay.
One thing I want to say about this podcast, I think you're doing a great job. Huge fans of the podcast. I've listened to your first three episodes already. And I play it in the car, actually, on my iPod. I think you're doing it. And if I have it correct, you're in India?
Yeah, India.
Which is right down the street from New Hampshire, United States. So if you start walking now, you might be able to make the show tonight. I know Iron Maiden is huge in India, because actually, in my personal life, not too long ago, I was working with many individuals that are from India. And one day, I just out of the blue, this is before they went on the Flight 666 tour and all that, mentioned Iron Maiden. They started going off on how much they love them. And actually, it caught me by surprise. And I guess I should have known better, but I guess they're just massive in your country right now.
Exactly. What happens is, in a country like India, you know, where Bollywood music is, you know, something that's really popular and everyone's into, it sort of, you know, gets on your nerves, especially when you're a heavy metal fan. And, you know, really, I don't think any big metal bands have ever played in India. I think Deep Purple have stopped here and stuff. But, you know, I think apart from then, I've never seen any you know, good metal band that's actually stopped here. And for a band like Iron Maiden, which is like, I mean, they're practically like the gods of metal. So for someone like that to come down, and it's like, especially when you're like metal starved and you get like such a big piece of meat, you absolutely go crazy. So that was the enthusiasm that the fans had. And I think anyone, you know, Chuck Billy from Testament actually said, when he was asked, you know, would you like to play in India, and he's like, after watching Flight 666, who wouldn't want to play in India? So,
good point. You know, it's funny you should say that, because here in the States, we just have everything at our fingertips. I mean, you can pull up on a website, there's on a given night, three or four national acts playing somewhere around at big arenas or theaters and whatnot. So, it's very easy for individuals here to take things for granted, and for you to have such rare opportunities, it kind of helps explain that awesome enthusiasm, you know, I could see on, you know, for example, on the video and whatnot. And certainly, we've chatted many, many times together, and I can, you know, see your enthusiasm in the chatting. And I got to tell you that that's the kind of stuff that gets you even more excited to try and go out and do a tribute. And one thing I want to emphasize, too, is independent of the vocals. And again, thank you for the compliment, because that's very good to hear. But you need everybody to really be a high-caliber performer and musician. And I've been maybe the luckiest guy in the world. I've had some amazing people in this band over the years that have jammed with me. And I'm going to actually throw some names out, because I just want to make sure that people are aware of who these individuals are. But on the guitar, like right now, for example, someone I've played with a lot off and on over many years is a guy named Dave Orndorff. He's doing the Adrian Smith. Awesome guitarist that I actually met when we were Killers. He used to be in a band that would come in and open up for us called Hit and Run. His name is Steve Burrows. And Steve is actually he's a big deal. He actually goes throughout the world doing guitar clinics and whatnot. He does our Dave Murray. And he is one of the greatest guys I've ever known. And he's an outstanding guitar player. Our bass player is one of the new guys, and he's a great guy. His name is Frank Bolero. He also has a Black Sabbath tribute band that he does that's awesome. They're called Supernaut. Wow. They kind of sound like 70s Sabbath on the mark. He's a great guy, too. So having these guys around has been a lot of fun. From a situation, we're actually kind of like a little bit in limbo. We've been fortunate to have some individuals doing the gigs with us that are really solid. I'm going to call them out, too. Brian Johnson, who drummed for us for like the last 5 years, just a great guy, great sense of humor, strong drummer, a guy we've been playing with that's going to do at least a number of gigs with us is a guy named Billy Feeney, and he's an awesome drummer. He also has a band that's very popular up in these way called Double Shot. Uh-huh. And just kind of going back, and forgive me for embellishing here, but just kind of going back in time to just thank some of the alumni. We had in the past Kristen Parrish. We actually had a woman in Killers. Her name is Kristen Parrish. She did Dave Murray. My life musical soulmate, the guy that co-founded Killers with me back in '97. His name is Matt Forsyth, or David Matt Forsyth. We have many memories together. He was for a long time Adrian Smith. We've jammed off and on for many years. Uh-huh. We've also done a lot of original music together in a band called Severe. He, I mean, just to give you an idea, I was with him on his birthday back in '97, and him and Adrian Smith sat down together, I'll never forget this, in a booth for about almost an hour, just jamming together. So here he is jamming with the guy he imitates, you know what I mean? So, and Adrian was actually pretty doggone impressed, and he should have been, because Matt said he was top flight. And then another guy that serves our military is, and a great guy, his name is John Ray. He was in the United States Navy. He did Adrian Smith for many years. Great guy. And just some other guys that played with us. Adam Freitas was on drums when we did our TV appearance. He did a lot of our earlier shows at Run to the Hills. Outstanding drummer. Sounds very much like Clive Burr, actually. He's got that feel. And then, and I hope I'm not leaving too many people out here, but one of the other key individuals who was in Killers and also early on with Run to the Hills was a guy named Brian Burke, who only because he had to move down south here in the States is not with us. He's an amazing bass player and a great guy. And I think actually his wife's in town tonight, going to come up to the show. So I just wanted to take this opportunity. It's been a little while since we've done any interviews and whatnot, and I'm the only one that could join them. But I want to let you know that I've been very blessed with just amazing players and people. And the one thing we all have in common is we're all huge fans of Iron Maiden.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. And, you know, to be totally honest, I'm not just saying this because you're on the show or to flatter you, but to be really honest, I think I've heard a couple of other tribute bands, like, you know, the female tribute band, which is the Iron Maidens. And I don't think there's any band that comes, you know, so close to Iron Maiden as you guys do. And it's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the stuff that I've heard on the Facebook page is like phenomenal. Some, you know, your vocals and everything, it's just out of this world. So it's really commendable, and you know, you're lucky enough to get to spend so much time with the band. I've personally never got to meet the band, but I imagine if I did, I don't think I'd be standing. I'd probably be in the ER or something. But I really think that
you know what you're talking about, you know. Hey, you can meet us though. I know you won't be wobbling in your boots, but you know, when you come over, I'll put you up at my place, and we can have some nice curry together.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'd get the curry. So, Sean, okay, one last question that I've got for you. If you had to choose your favorite Maiden album, what would that be and why?
The Number of the Beast. The reason being is it has the majority of my favorite songs. I should say that my favorite two people on this planet are my twin sons, Ashton and Peyton. They just turned six, and their favorite song happens to be my favorite song, which is what a coincidence, Run to the Hills. There's something about that album for me. It had just like an amazing crossroads of Bruce coming straight out of Samson. You can hear the excitement and the energy of a band just creating something on the cusp. But to be fair, it's tough to choose a favorite album, because I mean my favorites: Number of the Beast, Peace of Mind, Power Slave, Somewhere in Time, Brave New World, Matter of Life. Those are my favorites. But I'd have to say Number of the Beast, because again, it just has that for me, that crystallizing moment. And again, I'm a little biased towards Bruce, because I wish I was Bruce's left toe. But that's how much I worship him.
I get what you're saying exactly, because I play bass, and you know, Steve Harris is my god. So you know, just you know, it's like if you could even like probably get an autograph, it's like such a big deal for me. So I totally understand how you feel, because you're in a tribute band, and I mean, you love Bruce so much that you actually come so close to being Bruce, which is really cool in itself.
And I love Paul Di'Anno, and you know what, Blaze Bailey, I've grown to be very fond of his Wolfsbane material, and the material he's put out since he's departed Iron Maiden. His solo material is outstanding, absolutely outstanding.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you.
And actually, through your urging, I went back and dug out the X Factor again. And you know what? There's some really good stuff on the X Factor.
I totally agree with that. That's the one thing that I feel so bad about, because I mean, it had some really strong songs on there, but I think the production totally screwed it up. It just totally screwed the entire album up. It could have been a fantastic album. I think the drums are too loud.
I agree. I think that a good, strong producer would have made better decisions about the mix, but also I think would have had a little more of an influence on the performance. If I'm being honest, and I tend to be to my detriment sometimes, I think Blaze's singing on the album was a weak link. I find that he's singing too much just to the root note, meaning he's singing along with the chords. Uh-huh. And I think that's something that, you know, Bruce Dickinson, for example, overall would have taken and put in maybe a better choice of melody line to go with those riffs. Mm-hmm. I think Blaze had a thankless task. I mean, here he is going in with a guy that is, you know, one of the huge reasons why Iron Maiden was popular in the 80s. You know, he had that charisma and the vocal strength. The band's awesome, but, I mean, having that, I'll call him a ringleader out there, he was the you know, besides Eddie, kind of the face of Maiden on stage. And to have anyone slide into his shoes, I mean, you got a feel for the individual. But I think that when I went back and listened to the music, for me, I find it, with all due respect to everyone, I find it much stronger than No Prayer for the Dying and Fear of the Dark. I like that it's more serious. To me, it had a little bit of a dark undertone, which if you read this, you know, if you talk to the band, uh-huh. or if you've read the books, uh-huh. you know, Paris was going through tough times and whatnot.
Exactly. He was going through a divorce, I think, at that point of time.
He was, yeah. So it's... I would encourage anyone listening to this to revisit those and be a little more open-minded about the new material. And I think, you know, what's neat is I'm starting to even see this at some of the tribute gigs, is the generation change has happened. Uh-huh. Meaning all those sons and daughters of us folks who are big fans in the 80s have reached that age where they're getting out to the gigs. In my case, it's a little more dicey because here in the States, the vast majority of places, you have to be 21 years older to go in.
Exactly.
I guess it's a testament to we're starting to see individuals coming. And they're huge fans of everything. They're not prejudiced to the 80s like a lot of us were, because they weren't opening these brand new albums or cassettes as they came out. They just kind of look at a big canvas of Iron Maiden material. Mm-hmm. So they're able to be a little more balanced and open-minded about what they listen to.
Precisely.
That's a nice shot in the arm.
Precisely.
You guys, one thing before we wrap up?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
All right. Well, first off, if anyone's curious enough to come check us out, we've gotten away from a traditional website. We're using Facebook and MySpace now.
Uh-huh.
Go on either one and do a search for Run to the Hills, Iron Maiden Tribute Band. That's usually the best way to find the band. And, you know, feel free to jump on and have a quick listen to admittedly a little bit dodgy sound quality, our sound clips. But I promise we'll have videos up and whatnot in the near future. There's a lot of pictures on there of us performing. There's also a lot of pictures of us hanging out with the real Iron Maiden over the various tours and whatnot.
That we
just thought that was kind of cool. But the other thing, too, is I'm going to throw this out there, everyone. If you're a hardcore fan like we are, I have, and I will give this to everyone for free, I have hundreds of awesome Iron Maiden bootlegs that are very easy to get now on the internet, but I have them all together, including some rare stuff when Bruce was on the Killers tour in 81. I have a lot of rare Bruce stuff from Samson, Speed, Shots, before Maiden. I can go on, and I have lots of really awesome gigs. I would like to give that to anyone that wants them for free. Again, we don't want to be selling anything because that's pirating, but these aren't official recordings. So just as a fan, if anyone wants some of those goodies, just reach out to me. You can get me through those sites usually, and I'll be happy to hook you up.
Totally cool. That's really kind of you. And also, last but not least, what would you say to your fellow Maiden fans out there?
I would say that we are all very lucky that Iron Maiden is putting out a new album. I'm sorry, is it the? I can't remember the day. Is it the 7th or the 15th coming up of August?
It's the 16th. I think United States is the 17th of August. Worldwide, it's 16th.
Okay. Well, what I would say to all our Maiden fans is that go out and buy that album. Send a message to the band that you're willing to spend a little money on something you could probably, yes, get for free somewhere. I can say this from being a little bit inside in the music business. It is brutal these days for any band, even a famous band like Iron Maiden. The proliferation of people downloading music for free has killed, by and large, a lot of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bands that you would think of raking it in are struggling because nobody's buying anything. You know, with rare exception, nobody's buying things or downloading it for free. To be honest,
it's sort of like an insult to the band, because if you love the band so much, you should go out and buy it. I think if I didn't buy an Iron Maiden album and downloaded it instead, it would sort of be like an insult to the band. So,
well, it was a big source of their income. It used to be a big deal to get overrides on album sales, and that's what keeps a band in business. I like a lot of music from way back all the way up through now, modern bands and whatnot. The Maiden, for me, what's great, like any of those favorite bands we have that have been around for a while, they just keep putting out stuff that's consistent with who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I want to say is please buy that album. And the other thing I want to say is support anyone that's doing a Iron Maiden tribute, regardless of how good or bad the band might sound in a given area, whether it's vocals or whatever. I want to say to all my fellow friends that are doing tributes, I get that, you know, we all love the band, and I take my hat off to anyone that does that. I also want to say there is a sense of responsibility that we should all take. If we're going to do an Iron Maiden tribute band, I think we really owe it to Iron Maiden and to anyone that's a fan to really try to produce something that is going to at least resemble Iron Maiden. The biggest area I would say on that is probably the toughest one to get, with all due respect to all the other instruments, is the vocals.
Uh-huh.
just what I'm saying is, please take it seriously, because it is a tough band to cover. I know, you know, I go out and sing 2.5 hours straight, and it's tough. It's tough stuff. And Bruce, I mean, the way he runs around at his age and sings, I mean, I had a dream once I could do that, but you know, it's a work in progress. But you know, and I'm the biggest critic of myself, and we all are in our own band. But again, I just want to say to all the fans out there, I'm in tribute. Are not the hip thing right now. Meaning, even though Iron Maiden is really popular, they're not a top 40 band that's going to automatically fill a venue up, whether it's a club or a theater or whatever. I would encourage you to get out to go see the tribute band, because, again, when you're playing in clubs and whatnot, what every club wants is they want a decent draw so that obviously they can do a good night of business. Iron Maiden tribute bands in general, unless you're in like a really heavy-duty metro area, like a New York City here or Los Angeles, where, you know, just through sheer number of people, you're going to get a good turnout. Please make that effort to get out and do that, because to even do an Iron Maiden tribute band takes a lot of talent, takes a lot of effort, and again, it takes a lot of support. And that goes for us. Anyone in the Northeast USA that's nearby, we would certainly appreciate if you come by. One thing I can promise you is if you come to the event tonight or tomorrow night or in the near future, that we will put a lot of energy into giving you something that's authentic, that will at least, at the very least, remind you of an Iron Maiden concert.
Thanks, Sean. I think that was a really cool message for all the Maiden fans out there. One last thing before you go. I want you to say Scream for the Iron Maiden podcast.
All right. Scream for me, Iron Maiden podcast! Scream for me, Iron Maiden podcast!
Whoa. That was so cool, man. It's like I'm talking to...
back after a cup of coffee on that.
It's like I'm talking to Bruce Dickinson.
and this is Bruce Dickinson. I enjoyed this interview. Thank you very much.
Anyway, thanks, Sean. Thanks so much for being on the interview. And for all the main listeners out there, this isn't the first and last time that Sean's going to be on the interview. He's definitely going to come back for more shows. And it was awesome having you on.
Yes, I only have time for like 50 or 60 more appearances. So I'll see what I can do.
I hope we stay up till that long.
All right, and all you folks in India, up the irons to you, right?
Up the irons, Sean. Alright, thanks for being on the show, and once again, up the irons.
It's a privilege.
Alright. Thanks, guys, for listening to the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this interview session with Sean. He's definitely going to be back for more episodes. Last but not least, with great sadness, Ronnie James Dio passed away on the 16th of May. 2010, and may his soul rest in peace. It came as a huge shock to me, and I had no clue about it till the 18th, actually, because I was in Bangalore for the Lamb of God concert, and I was basically cut off from the internet world for the next 2 or 3 days. So when I got to a computer 2 days later, I read about the death of Ronnie, and I really love him, and I hope his soul rests in peace. From all the Maiden fans out there, I hope Ronnie is in a better place, and I hope his suffering is ended, and that's all I wish for. And may his soul rest in peace. Thanks for listening, and up the irons.